Annoy people on the quiet car and call the fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Oh yeah, it's 12:01 back on the fan. BT and Sal here on this Friday. Brandon Tierney, Sal Licata Show. Top story as we crown it. I mean, how interesting is this? Just boil it down to its simplest form. So, since the moment they flew out there and begged Aaron Rodgers to come and save the Jets, and I would have done the same thing. I'm not taking a shot. I mean, beggars can't be choosers, you know, or losers can't be beggars, or losers can be beggars, whatever, however you have to, you know, splice up that saying here for the Jets. But they have acquiesced at every turn for Aaron Rodgers. Oh, five former Packer teammates. Yeah, sure, bring them in. Four of whom pretty much can't play a lick. Eh, whatever, we'll make you comfortable. Come on in. Offensive coordinator. We don't really know if he's any good without you, but yeah, sure. Bring him in as well. What else do we want to do here? Oh, you want to throw on the field even though you just ruptured your Achilles and let everybody think you're coming back and go on Pat McAfee and tell us about your rehab and all this sorts of stuff? Sure, go ahead and do it. So they've acquiesced at every turn and allowed Aaron Rodgers to do whatever he wants to do. And here we are, the thing that he's actually literally paid to do, which is play football, they are, in all probability, not going to allow him to do it against the Giants in that third preseason game, which is the only one that matters. I would play him, whether it's a series or two. I think there's no difference from last year. I said the same thing last year to you when we started doing our show. I would play him against the Giants. I would roll the dice. He's not coming off a great season. It's a new team. It's a totally new stadium. It's all that other stuff. I would play him last year, and I would play him this year.
Yeah, I just can't run that risk. I understand, and my core beliefs have always been, hey, you got to play these guys in the preseason at least one game, play him through the first half, play him in the third quarter, you know, in the third preseason game going into the year. We just don't see that anymore. And in this particular case, and just because we don't see it anymore doesn't matter, but in this particular case, with Aaron Rodgers, you know, his age, coming off of what happened last year, and the way that the sport is now, where basically the first few, 4 weeks, whatever, you want to say 3-4 weeks, first few weeks of the season, where basically they are preseason games anywhere where teams get a feel for what they are while the games count in the standings, I would not run the risk of having Rodgers set foot on the field in a preseason game.
Oh, man. What do you think they're going to do? Do you think that, do you think he pushes it? Like, they don't want him to play. I think that he wants to. You think he flexes here or what?
You know, that's a great question. I ultimately think if Rodgers really wants to play, they're going to let him play. So, yes, if Rodgers says, I need to play, I want to play, I'll play a series, a drive, whatever it may be, I'm playing in the third preseason game, then they're going to allow him to play. They could say that he's not playing or they don't want him to, but if he really wants to play, There's no way, based on anything that I've seen from the way that they operate here, the Jets hierarchy with Aaron Rodgers since he's been here, there's no way that they're going to take control over that. I'd be stunned if that's the case.
Listen, I get it. One game means something a lot. One game means literally nothing in terms of the standings. But what do you think is more dangerous? Forget about the actual value of the game itself, right? Counting or not counting. You think it's more dangerous to have him come out there against the Giants and do a sprint out to the right and, you know, throw a couple of comeback routes to Garrett Wilson, whatever, maybe two drives, right? And in a situation where the Giants aren't busting out their exotic blitzes and putting it on film week three of the preseason, but you do get past the point of what you can replicate in practice, but there's a little danger there, for sure, because you're playing a different team, not your team, or put him in bubble wrap, risk nothing, and then just throw him to the Wolves against the Niners who are going to look to destroy him.
Yeah,
What's more dangerous?
I think equal. I don't think that
See,
you
I
can...
Don't.
Yeah, I don't think... Look, at some point, Rodgers is going to face his first real live game action. For me, I'd rather be in a game that counts. Like, you can never say... I'm sure week one, everybody's going to say, oh, man, the first time we get hit for real, like, this really counts now. Because even in the preseason, to your point, they're not turning it up to the level that they will when the games actually count. So then really, what's the point of playing him anyway? At some point, he's going to get that first real burst, that first real hit. That feeling, for me, I'd rather him have that. I don't even know if you could replicate that in the preseason. I'd rather have that come in week one of the game that counts. I would not be able to live with myself if I'm Rodgers or if I'm Saleh or Joe Douglas, if Aaron Rodgers somehow got hurt in the preseason, I'm not talking about just a devastating injury like we saw last year. I'm talking about any injury.
Even a hamstring, something more benign. Yeah,
yeah, okay. So if it happens...
So you live in fear.
If it happens in week one or week two, it happens, you deal with it. If it happens in the preseason, it's all the, oh my God, why was he even playing in the
preseason? Worried about the PR hit?
No, I'm worried about myself, knowing that there is no good... In my opinion, there is no good that could come of playing Aaron Rodgers in the preseason.
Except that they're more in sync to start the real season.
Yeah, but is that a real thing?
I think it is.
Oh, I mean, I do. So he's going to play a whole game. Every starter's going to play a whole game. And even then, they still have a week off. So you're practicing, training camp, week one preseason, you're not playing. Week two preseason, you're sitting there and watching. Week three, you go all the way. You play the first half, you play the third quarter, and then that's it. Then you shut it down again for a week, and then you ramp it back up. Like, there is no continuity or consistency or really any duplicate for live game in-season action until you're in it. And I think it's why it takes the majority of these teams to get going. I just can't, at his age, off of that injury, with this organization and franchise, I'm keeping him in bubble wrap until week one. I'm not ruining any mojo going into the year. I'm not messing with any of that. There's no need. I think the risk is far outweighs whatever reward there might be.
Listen, again, I obviously get that. I don't agree, but I understand it. To me, like, there's the tactical approach, you know, pertaining to football, which you point out, and you're right. And then there's the other stuff, which to me is what always gets in the Jets' way. Or, too often gets in their way. The PR stuff, which means nothing on Sunday.
Right.
Like, if you're telling me, and you're partially telling me this, because you do also incorporate, or you started to, I think, like, how they would be perceived if he got hurt in the preseason. That shouldn't factor in. Like, they should not be calculating what I would be, I'm not saying me specifically, but what we would be ranting and raving about on the fan and the callers and the tweets. Do what's right for your team. And if by that deduction, what they think is right for the team is to keep them out, I would disagree, but I could at least respect that more than them saying, oh my God, can you imagine if this guy gets hurt against the Giants? We'll never hear the end of it.
Right,
but can't run a team like that.
No, but I don't think it would be because of the, like, I would never make a decision based on what I thought anybody else was going to say in any aspect
you
of life. Especially,
but I
that.
Think that they
well,
might.
Then that's a problem.
That's what I'm saying.
No, I didn't mean it in the aspect of that's all what we're going to be talking about or people going to be writing about. I mean that if I'm the one who's making that decision, I'd be beating myself up saying, what the hell was I thinking playing him in the preseason when it's just an obvious layup where there's no need to run the risk of having Aaron Rodgers go out there, especially after having what happened last year. Like, that should be front and center in your mind. I understand that there is some value in having guys play in a preseason game. I definitely get that. In this particular case with Aaron Rodgers, I do not think that the risk is worth whatever minimal reward that might come of it. I'd rather, and again, not sacrifice losing game one on purpose, but I'd rather take my lumps in game one and let that be the game where everybody gets, you know, in sync and feels the first hits and try to build that chemistry in live game action as opposed to a preseason game.
I got one more question for you. We'll get back to the phones here. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Rodgers, what would you do? Obviously, touched on the Giants. John Mara had some interesting comments as well. This 10-game roadie the Mets are staring at, very big. We'll get the Yanks in there as well, so we're kind of jumping around a little bit. BT and Sal on the fan. So that's the team aspect, right, Sal? We're attacking this from what should the Jets do. Let's put ourselves in shoes that, outside of Boomer and Tiki, nobody else here can relate to.
Right.
Let's put ourselves in Aaron Rodgers' shoes. Would you want to play if you're Rodgers?
I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say that, never being a football player, but I would assume that, yes, I would probably want to play. And be like, let me get out there, let me get a taste of it now before it gets going. That's just, I would think every player would probably want that to be the case. But unfortunately, the way that the sport has gone, or maybe to their benefit, because you're not having guys, you know, injuries still happen regardless, but you're not taking more risks with playing guys in games that don't matter.
Yeah.
And maybe that's even more so why they're thinking about expanding the season. We talked about what they're going to do to change it. Well, if they add an extra game, they're going to lose a preseason game, and then you're going to have even less preseason games to talk about potentially playing, because like the fourth game is just a total waste anyway.
Oh, man, I know.
And it's always been. But you're going to have an extra regular season game. Well, what do you think that's going to mean? That's going to mean that first week in the regular season is going to be even more of a preseason-type feel and preseason-type play with the slop and not clean, crisp play where guys are getting a feel for the first time in-game action in a game that counts. I mean, that's the way that we're going. So I would assume players want to play and get that feel, but I also... like it shouldn't be their choice. Ultimately, it should be the hierarchy.
All right, let's get back to you guys here. Zach is in Massapequa. What's happening, Zach? BT and Sal, how you doing today?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Love the show.
Thank you, dude.
So I'm a Jets fan. I'm a big Jets fan. I'm here to talk about some Rodgers. I think he should play. I agree with you, BT. We got to stop living in fear. I mean, if we're scared that he's going to get hurt and we got to bubble wrap the guy, he shouldn't even be in the league at this point. You got to let him play. Like, he's got to get a feel for it. He hasn't played in a year. I know it might be a drive or it might be, one series alone, but it's something that you're not getting in practice. He's not getting hit in practice.
Right, but why do that in a game that doesn't mean anything?
But why'd they let him do it last year?
Maybe
he can get he's not, obviously he's not a rookie. He's a Hall of Famer. He's been in the league forever.
Right.
But at the end of the day, he still has a rookie wide receiver that he needs to get on the same page with. Team isn't exactly the same. He's playing behind a new O-line that he would like to get comfortable under.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I mean, there's a lot of reasons for it.
Right, but why can't you do that in week one where it matters? And by the way, just because he played last year doesn't mean it was the right thing. And he ended up getting hurt anyway. So how did that help? I mean, that the argument of, you get a feel for it, you move around live game action, he ended up getting hurt anyway. And just because he played doesn't mean it's the right thing. Why would you run that risk?
Well, I don't really think obviously it's a risk. But if you're not willing to run that risk, then he shouldn't really be on the team.
No, but you could say that with every player. It's not even just his age, although his age is a different part of the story. Why would you? I'm not saying don't play Aaron Rodgers. I'm saying don't play Aaron Rodgers in a preseason game that means absolutely nothing. Like, there's a big difference, Big difference there. You guys are willing to run the risk of having him get hurt in a game that means nothing. I'd rather just, if your argument is you want him more ready for the regular season and you think by him playing a drive, a series, a quarter, whatever it may be in a preseason is going to have him more ready for Monday night in San Francisco, I would just say that I'd rather have him get ready in the first quarter or first drive in San Francisco. Like, he's not playing four quarters in the preseason game. He's not playing a full half. In all likelihood, he's not playing a full quarter if he were to play. So I could just do that Monday night in San Francisco. All right, big boy, here we go. Now it counts. Go get the fields. Go get the first drive out of the way. See what happens. Second drive, third drive, first quarter's over. Now you're back in the feel of things in a game that matters.
888-808-1019, BT and Sal. So let me ask you this real fast, though. So do you believe that his Achilles is fully healed? That's an easy question.
I would assume it is.
Yeah. I mean, the answer is yeah, right? I mean, structurally, it's sound. It's fine. Is it susceptible to more stuff? Who knows? But, I mean, the initial repair, he's fine. Okay. He's got his bounce. He's got his whatever bounce remains. Mm-hmm. The elasticity of the tendon is back. It's secure. Good. Okay. So if the Achilles is not the issue, which it's not right now, then why would you have two radically different approaches this year versus last year?
I don't think I wanted to play him last year either.
No, I don't mean you. I mean the Jets. Yeah. I'm talking about the Jets. I don't mean you.
Oh, because of coming off the injury. Yeah, coming off the injury would
but
have
the
them
injury's
say,
fine.
Yeah. Well, but I'm saying it happened, and he's another year older, and there's just no need for it. And also last year, I don't remember the exact thing. I'm assuming Rodgers basically begged to play last year. I would assume. I don't know that to be the case, but I would assume that Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh probably didn't want him to play last year. I remember having this conversation with you. I don't remember how I felt about it.
I wanted him to play. I was very adamant about that.
Right, and I probably was not. I probably felt the same way about him. Again, theoretically and normally, I would agree with you, but with him specifically, I would not run that risk. And they did last year for minimal. What was it, a drive?
Yes, it was one.
Drive.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep,
and that was it. And I mean,
that was a glorious 7 minutes, boy. That was fun to be in the house for that.
And as it turns out, that was the highlight of the Jets season. We're getting into a different reason why you want him to play.
Boy, that beer tasted good, Todd. Nice draft. I was sitting in the suite. I'm like, here we go. All right, we're inside of our Town Fair Tire Studio. Our friends at Town Fair remind you that you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Monroe, Connecticut. Dominic checks in on the fan. What up, Dom?
What's up, guys? How you doing today?
All right.
So listen, let me ask you, Sal. Would you be averse to Aaron Rodgers coming in maybe the third quarter starting off against the second and a third string defense because he can get his feet wet. He's not playing against anybody that's going to be doing anything, you know.
I still
got to prove a point, but
I I don't understand what good that's going to do. I still just don't think it's worth the risk to have him set foot on the field. I wouldn't even dress him. I didn't want him to dress. I didn't want you to think you're getting on the field. Do it week one.
I hate when people say they want to take that risk. It's an inherent game. It's risk.
Yeah.
So, like, week one, like BT was saying, you put him in week one when San Fran is actually going out there to try to kill somebody.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but the game counts.
Then you put him in. But realistically, in my mind, every game counts because it's practice.
Not the preseason. Not the preseason.
No,
it does not count.
They count for the record,
right.
But they count for the people.
They
count for the players. They count for the organization, you know?
No, I don't know. They don't. Because if they counted for the organization, then why don't they play all their best players all the time? The preseason literally
does not
count. I think
it means personal gain, chemistry. I don't think it means it literally, but you know.
But it also doesn't because the majority of teams don't. Even back in the old days, they did not play in the preseason. They played maybe a game.
Well, define the old days. I'm pretty sure Phil Sims, when he was drafted, I'm pretty sure he played every game.
I'm talking about 20 years ago.
Okay, that's right. I just want to make sure. I thought so. I feel like when Chad Pennington didn't play like the first quarter of the first game, I feel like he did.
What, playing in the first quarter of the first preseason game?
Play like a drive or two and just kind of lengthen as you got to that third game, and then you play into the third quarter? Yeah.
I mean,
positive.
Maybe. I mean, but they're not playing the entire game.
No, I know that. I know.
So the games don't matter. Like, it's an evaluation of the deeper roster and whatever ways they want to figure things out. But it was always, all right, the third preseason game is the dress rehearsal. That was always the case back then. And a lot of times they didn't even play the full game. You're building up stamina, whatever, you're getting a real feel for it. It's just different now. And I don't think that of all the players, Aaron Rodgers is the one who least needs to get acclimated to the speed of an NFL game and least needs to take that risk at his age. And it is taking a risk because you'd be playing him in a game that doesn't mean anything. You make the argument that, all right, well, yeah, he could get banged up in week one. Yeah, but week one counts. Those games count. If you win that game, you have a better chance of winning the division. And if you win the division, you have a better chance of going through the playoffs and getting the Super Bowl. That's what it's about. If you win the preseason game three or Rodgers plays well in the preseason game three, it means nothing. That's the difference.
Well, I mean, most people are saying he should play. It's crazy.
What does that mean?
That means I'm right.
In your mind, I mean,
it's what it means.
I don't care if we take 1,000 calls and they'll agree with
you. No, I'm messing around, obviously. But I am surprised that so many people want him to play. Believe that he should play.
Me too.
I thought more people will be with you.
And we'll see. Well, maybe they get what they want. Maybe Rodgers does end up playing. And again, let's just say he does play. I think we could all agree that he's not playing an entire half. Probably not even playing an entire quarter.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So then what's that going to do? Like, if you are going to play, then play.
So why did he play last year? I keep coming back to that.
Again, maybe he wanted to.
It's maddeningly inconsistent.
Right, with what? With them?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. But again, he did get hurt, and he is another year older.
I know. He's also a year rustier. I mean, he has not played football at all.
Right.
I just think it's almost cavalier to run him out there against that Niners team with nothing, without taking one batting practice swing. Go get it, Rodgers!
Yeah. I mean, we'll
hopefully
see.
Hopefully you don't whiff on the blindside blitz. Hopefully you pick it up. Hopefully you identify what's in front of you. Don't be rusty.
Well, we'll see what they do.
Oh, man,
I just don't see the good. But that's what's going to happen.
I think it is going to happen.
Well, I'm talking about
I don't think it should.
Even the majority of the league, it's week one. All right, here we go for real. And now everybody's suiting up and playing a full game. Like, you don't think that the starters who don't play in the preseason or haven't played a full game since last season are going to be a little winded by the third, fourth quarter? Of course it's going to happen.
Yeah, they will.
That's what training camp is for. It's not like we're just rolling out of bed and showing up week one. I mean, training camp is supposed to get these guys in shape.
Talk New York sports on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Oh, yeah. Back to work. I love that sound. Some wins here. Jersey Mike's Yankees box office blitz, and we've got a pair of field-level tickets to see those Bombers who have suddenly turned their season around at the stadium. Texas is in. That is Friday, August 9th. Right now, we'll do call the number 10, 866-540-WFAN. 866-540-9326. Is that the series Carton's doing?
I believe it is. Texas, right?
There you go. Don't jinx us, Craig. That's your chance to win now. It's all from Jersey Mike's, the official sub sandwich shop of the New York Yankees, Box Office, Blitz, and The Fan.
Which series are you doing? Did you get in there yet?
Yeah, still waiting, buddy. Crickets. Crickets. You know what? It's ridiculous.
I brought that up to asking. Craig. When you were off early in the week, he burst into the studio, so I was talking to him about that.
He just popped in?
Yeah, he popped in, and I forget if he asked where you were or something, but somehow you came up, and I was like, when, you know, BT going to get a shot of that? And he said something like, oh, spot's taken.
Yeah. Oh, man. How is he? Is he actually doing the play-by-play?
Yeah, I think so.
He's not a play-by-play guy.
He said that he already spoke with Susan.
It's a talk show. I'm not worried about that. Yeah. That'll be fine. He's not a play-by-play guy. He'll do well, but...
He did play-by-play in
the Devils,
Syracuse.
Right, hockey? Did he at Syracuse?
That's what he said. Yeah, he did it at college. Okay. He's done play-by-play before. That was originally, I guess, you know, one of the things that he wanted to do.
I don't know about you.
For me, when I was a kid, like, in my yearbook, I think it said I wanted to be the voice of the Mets, Knicks, and Rangers. Like, Marv Albert was my idol. I loved Marv Albert.
Yeah.
Met him once outside the Garden after a Knick game. And I was like, oh, my God, Marv, thank you and good luck with your career. And I was like, oh, my God, like Marv Albert just said thank you and good luck with my career.
Mm-hmm.
It was for me, going to a Knicks game, remember the broadcast booth?
Yes.
Used to be in the center.
Where the tunnel is. Where they the Marty Glickman Memorial. I've done games from there.
Right, which is awesome that you've done. So now when I would go to a Knick game early.
Not there anymore, of course. Yeah. They had to move it with their renovations.
Which
sucks, stinks.
But when I remember going to a game early, and I feel like Mike and Chris did shows from there.
Yeah.
This is before I started working here. But I remember once specifically going to Marv and seeing him there. And my buddy took a picture of it. And it's me talking to Marv and him signing a basketball. Like, I didn't care. Not that I didn't care about Ewing or Starks. Obviously, I did. But I just cared as much about Marv. So I always wanted to do play-by-play. And then I realized, wow, that's a lot of work.
I think it's less work.
No way.
It is. You don't work every day.
What are you kidding me?
What?
The prep that goes into that?
Oh, please, you can mail it in. You know the league.
The travel, the prep that goes into it. Honestly, what really happened, that was pre-me discovering Mike and the Mad Dog. And then once I discovered them, I was like, oh, that's what I want to do.
No, I get it. I think it depends what you want. I think it's more fun to do a show. But I think being a play-by-player is easier. Let me just back that up. When I say easier, I don't mean easier to quote-unquote make it. I mean, once you are in the, you know, in the rotation, so to speak, and you know the league, I'm not saying guys like Breen do this, I'm not saying you just show up and mail it in, but you're reacting to what's in front of you. You're not generating phone calls and this and
that.
I mean,
it's a totally
And you're not working every night.
This, to me, is easier.
I agree.
Where maybe
us.
That for yeah okay well but
I think play by play is easy. I think the Yanks are missing out. I'm dead serious. I can do it with my eyes shut. You think I'm kidding?
I know that you're not. But
honestly, I know we goof around. You think I'd be good or bad at it? What do you think I'd be at? How would I do?
I've never heard you do play by play. Although I guess I've heard you on St. John's stuff.
Yeah,
I think Mink. I know you said you did the. I know you could do, but that's also being an analyst.
I did Knicks play by play.
I'm saying a million years ago,
11 games.
Yeah, I think
college baseball play-by-play.
I think you're qualified for an opportunity.
You got to stop bringing this up though, because then I start busting out the resume, which nobody cares about. Yeah. I start getting a little annoyed here that I'm not getting a chance.
Well, no, I'm just saying.
You had to bring it up, didn't you?
Well, it was something that I was thinking. You said Craig is doing those games, and it made me think of the other day when I brought it up to him. I didn't get a chance to bring it to you.
No, see, here's your chance to get that little needle out.
Well,
again,
that's not even a needle. Yeah, it's not. I cannot believe that you think that it's easy. Like, for me, it was
okay, easier
than doing a talk show?
Let me give you... No, not for you and I, because we do this.
Yeah.
So it's... Listen, both are unnatural professions. To open up a microphone and communicate with a large group of people in a conversational way with thought-provoking, compelling stuff, whatever, make people think, make people react, that's hard. And when you're good at it, it might seem easy, but it's not.
Right.
Okay, we both agree with that,
that's
right?
That's the best way to say it. Okay. They're both difficult, but for me, this is easier, and I feel like that was too much work.
I get that, but to me, like...
Well, maybe you just don't have as much interest in it. Like, I don't care about who's on it.
Yeah, there you go. But like to me, like looking at something in front of me and reacting to it is just easier on the brain than coming up with thought-provoking content, because all I'm doing is I'm looking at people move and I'm telling you what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know.
I've done it at...
Yeah, Chandler Brunson, left side, a little pump fake. Here's Hartenstein with the roll. Yeah, I mean, come on. You make stuff up. What's so hard about
it? You make stuff up.
Well, you know what? I hate to make stuff up. But,
you mail it in. Then you wonder why you haven't gotten... just going to mail it in.
I think hockey play-by-play is incredibly hard.
Yeah, but maybe that's just because you don't feel like you know the sport as well as the other one. It was... Look, like anything else, the more you do it, the better you become at it. And I did enjoy doing it the few opportunities that I had. I did baseball for Columbia play-by-play a couple of games.
Oh, okay.
And then I did analyst for Columbia football and basketball for
like 10
years.
Right? You did that stuff with Jerry.
Yeah, but like I would see the prep that Jerry puts in. I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, I just want to sit and react to the game and give my opinion and analysis. And even that was not my strength. Like, it just,
I know
I
what you're
out of place.
Yeah, I never wanted to be a play-by-player. Yeah. Like, I was never a player. Like, I never wanted to be Marv Albert or I wanted to be a player. I wanted to be Don Mattingly.
I thought, right. Well,
I just missed it by 10,000 miles. Just came up short, Sal.
Yeah. What's harder, that or to become a play-by-play guy?
No, oh, my God.
I thought it was just, I thought that's what I wanted to do, and then I discovered talk radio. But either way,
there you go. We get Julio in Wading River, New Jersey, BT and Sal on the Fan. What's up, Julio?
Hey, what's up, guys? I just wanted to chime in on this. The reason why I think Aaron Rodgers should play, not only just Aaron Rodgers, but a lot of the starters in the NFL, because you don't play preseason games. You go into the first week, and it's like you're getting punched in the jaw. I'm a Giants fan, and when Dallas punched us in the jaw in that first week, we did this, you know, like you said, Sal, that game counts. Game one counts. You're not ready. If you're putzing around in practice, why putz around in these preseason games? They made these preseason games so you can get finely tuned and on the same page as all your players. So I understand you're not going to play all the quarters, but to play, build yourself up. Play a quarter, maybe play into the second quarter the next game, and then you worry about health. You're ready, but at least you're on the same page with all your players.
Yeah, I mean, there is logic to that theory. I used to believe in it, and I do still to a certain extent. Now, it's never going back. There's no way they're going to do it. I just don't think with Rodgers off of last year at his age, under the circumstances which, like, if he does play... What do you think, BT? Max, Aaron Rodgers, if Rodgers says, you know what, I'm going to play, what do you think Max is?
Two series.
What's that going to do? Nothing. So the fact if you want them to get really ready, you're right. If you want to get ready for the regular season, what you should be doing is playing hard in the preseason. Play a little bit in game two, play the whole game in game three, or close to the whole game in game three. You want to play the first quarter of game four, whatever it may be, fine, then shut it down. But that's what you should be doing. That doesn't happen anymore. And it's certainly not going to happen with the Jets. So when I say, should he play or shouldn't he, I'm thinking, yeah, what good is it running him out there for a series or two? I wouldn't even take the risk. Just go out there in game one like everybody else does now in week one of the NFL and make that be the extension of a preseason.
I think this is one of your overnight creatures, Sal. Popcorn Bob and Wonton.
Hey,
Bobby
Popcorn.
Boy, what's popping?
Yeah, what's going on, buddy?
What's up,
hey,
Popcorn
guys, man.
Bob?
Great show, man. Good to see you. Get to hear from you, man. Hey, Sal, so I'm going to say this. At any given moment, right, when you're talking about contact sport, you're subjected to an injury, number one. Number two, with the injury that he had, he came up limp, meaning that he didn't cause the injury himself, but what I'm saying is it was not a contact.
Mm-hmm.
And so even when you on a practice field, number one, the guys that you're going up against, those are your guys. So they're not going to go hard as one of the other guys on the opponent. I want to put my best at all times because I understand that it's a contact sport. And even on a practice field, you could come up limp. You can come up with an injury. And so it's a matter of guys getting their head into the game and making sure that they're aware of their body and what they're going to do and how they're going to take a contact, how they're going to, you know, avoid contact, go down, you know, don't try to do too much. It's just a matter of getting your head in the game and making sure that you cover all grounds so that you don't come up, you know, with an injury. So I believe, man, give him a shot, see what he got, man, because it's been too long that we've been waiting to see this Aaron Rodgers over here and perform.
Popcorn. Hey, you know, BT, Popcorn Bob was a big break dancer.
Was he really?
Yeah. Maybe you have to have a dance off.
All right.
You too.
All right,
no, you know what? You were a good breakdancer, you
I
said.
I was not good. I
Popcorn
was okay.
Bob said he used to do that quite a
Did
bit.
Did he really?
Yeah. We've had these conversations on the overnight. You get to know people.
Well, you kill a dime, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So, what year were your parents born, Popcorn Bob? Right, right. What hospital?
Yeah. Was the steward in Brooklyn. You had to hear some of his stories.
Ooh. Really?
Yeah, he would get a little nuts. I do miss him, though, but yeah. We get to know a lot about him.
Popcorn Bob would break. So, he's got to be, he was doing this in the 80s, he was doing this.
I believe I so, yeah. I forget the exact details, but anyway, he doesn't bring up bad points there. With Aaron Rodgers, like you can't, you know, it was a non-contact injury. There's nothing you could do to ultimately prevent guys. We talk about this all the time.
I know.
However, you are taking an extra risk where I deem in this particular case unnecessary.
I get it. And I would just say, let's go. It's football, and you haven't done much of that in a while. And before I roll you out there against a team that very well might be in the Super Bowl and is at home, I'm going to give you a couple of, you know, couple of reps and see where it goes and take the chance. And I can see why people are terrified of that. And I guess my only fundamental, real strong pushback is that I hope. I'm pretty sure the Jets are doing this for the wrong reason. Like, I would guarantee that they're terrified if he goes down, we're going to get hammered on the fan, we're going to get crushed in the papers, on the websites, on social media.
Well, that should not even enter their thought process. But if that's the case, it's bad.
But you know it does.
Yeah.
You know it does.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Swung on. There it goes. Deep left, it is high. It is far. It is gone. Number 62 to set the new American League record.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, BT and Sal back on The Fan, 12:46. We'll get back to these Aaron Rodgers calls. Hit a little Mets earlier as well. Let me throw a little something on the table for the Yankees. Actually, I'm going to incorporate both, so I like to do this from time to time. And since neither team played yesterday, let's get to the update as we get back to now as we start to sweat through the rest of the baseball season. Now it's go time, all right? Trade deadline's over. Both teams did what they did. We know where they stand. Here's a little bit more of a deeper analytical dive. So right now the Yankees are projected to win 97.9 games. The Mets are at 86.4. The specific model that I use a lot, I've referenced it before, but you know, I haven't done it in a little bit. The Yankees right now have a 99.9% playoff probability rate. The Mets are at 60.2, and the Yankees have a 76.5 divisional supremacy rate to win the division, and the Mets are obviously low at 2.1. So Yankees about 98 wins, the Mets right around 86. Yankees are almost a lock to make the playoffs. Mets are above 60%, but barely, and then a long shot, you know, and then some to win the division. Yankees right now the odds-on favorite to win the American League East. Does that surprise you that right? And again, it's just one model, but like if I said, hey, Sal, there's a 70, Vegas thinks there's a 77% chance the Yankees win the East, not Baltimore. Would you take that or not?
I think it should be actually higher. They're tied right now. Yeah, they're tied right now.
Yeah.
I mean, anything could happen. It's the rest of the way.
Well, then why not make it 50-50? Because anything could happen. I agree with you.
Yeah, but it just feels like the Yankees, because of who they are always going to have the advantage in that regard. I guess that's a fair number then when you put it that way.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, they were down for a while. I mean, I don't even know if the division means that much anymore. I wanted to ask Cashman that, obviously, but we ran out of time the other day. I was going to ask him, had it on my list, if he values winning the division or prefers one or the other. Some people don't like the layoff that happens after you win the division. Anyway, yeah, that's fair. 70's fair.
I'm getting greedy now. All right. Listen, I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't know what was going to happen when the Yankees just, and hopefully that's the absolute bottom out. They were dead, dormant, life. They looked awful. They have regenerated a lot because of Jazz Chisholm and obviously Judge is the man, whatever. They've got a lot of games they're supposed to win now. So you look at this, Toronto, who's missing players and not even that good. There's a 9-game homestand in the Bronx. 3 with Toronto, 3 with the Angels, and then 3 with the Rangers. I want 7-2. Like, the Yankees got to bag 7 wins here. I mean, let me take that back. They don't have to. But to me, if they are going to win the division, you go 7-2 against these teams. Like, you're supposed to win a lot of these games.
Why just 7-2?
Well, I mean, I want to be realistic. It's baseball. I'm not saying they can't go 8-1.
Oh, I mean, they've won 5 in a row.
Yeah.
Against better teams.
True. That's true.
The way that they're playing. Now, I do think that they're going to come back down to earth a little bit. Like, if you actually look at the way that they won some of these games, they very easily could have lost, and you could argue should have lost Saturday night. The Grisham ball should have been caught by a competent outfielder. I know the dude could hit, Tyler O'Neill. If I were in left field, I would have made that play. I could confidently say that. May not be able to hit one over the monster. Mm-hmm. I would have made that play in left field. Like, it's fly ball. You got to catch it. Anyway, it drops in.
Well, they even got lucky with the ball that banged off the first base bag that went to Torres. What's his name? Made a great play in center field, Grisham, in the extra innings.
And by the way, like, I'm not trying to take away their win. They earned the win. They got it. And it wasn't like they haven't had bad luck over the course of the last 7 weeks. So you take the wins when you can get them. I'm just saying it was close to losing that game. Also in Philadelphia, they were fortunate to be able to come away with at least one of those wins. They probably would have won that series anyway. But I'm not sold that all is right. All is fixed with the Yankees just yet. I understand the potential. I need to see a little bit more after what I saw for 7 consecutive weeks than just to all of a sudden feel like the switch has been flipped and everything's back on. The Yankees are going to the World Series off of 5 games, 2 of which they were very fortunate to win.
And by the way, I agree. I'm not saying that I think they're going 7-2, although I think they could. I'm saying they need to.
Yeah.
Let's
start to turn the corner now. This should be where the worst is behind us, and you don't have to go out there and dominate every game, but play like a good team the majority of the time. I mean, that's what
it's just a lot of bad baseball to ignore, to your point. I mean, they played so bad for so long to just sit here and say, well, it was just a little aberration. I mean, an aberration's a bad week. An anomaly's a bad, hey, drop 6 out of 7 here.
Right.
And let's get back on the horse. They were the White Sox for a month and a half.
Okay, and then when I ask you, what was the biggest reason you think for the 5-game turnaround?
Chisholm.
Well, but A, Jazz wasn't even here for the first couple of those games.
Yeah, he got to the Fenway, on Sunday.
B, he's not going to be able to be Babe Ruth the rest of the way.
For sure.
So that type of impact, now he may be better than what he was in Miami. Sure, maybe there's the Yankee pump up where he feels happy to be in New York in a pennant race and put on the pinstripes, and maybe he plays well for an extended stretch or the rest of the way, but it's not going to be to that level where he's homering 4 times in 4 games.
No, there's no way. No, so he's not that kind of hitter.
Yeah, so that's one that's going to level out at some point.
Mm-hmm. What if DJ just started getting going? I'm not saying I put money on that, but he started striking a little bit. What if he starts going up?
Well, that to me has been the biggest thing. Not DJ specifically, but Verdugo, Wells, Torres, making teams putting teams in a difficult spot, forcing them to pitch to Aaron Judge, or at least making things more difficult to be able to pitch around Aaron Judge. Are those guys, are you fully now, and not you in general, but just are we all fully now believing that Verdugo's going to be the leadoff guy, Volpe's figured it out now finally, and he'll be consistent, Torres is going to be fine, LeMayu's turned the corner, Giancarlo's going to have his presence. Are we sold that what we've seen in these last 5 games is going to continue the rest of the way? I'm not. And we haven't even gotten to the starting pitching yet.
Well, and Cole's going on Sunday. Yeah, you could probably say that's the biggest game of the Yankee season so far.
For him, 1,000%, and for them, because they need him to at least give 6 innings.
Yeah, now
he's got to go out there and just be healthy.
Yeah, and there's not even a guarantee that he absolutely pitches. Like, they believe he's going to pitch. When you scratch with general soreness, that's very nebulous. Like, okay, is it the shoulder? Is it the elbow? Is it the leg?
He said the elbow. He's just fatigued. Normal.
Not normal.
Let's say he started the season. Like, would he be shut down in his 8th start because of body fatigue?
Well, he never has thus far in his career. He's a horse. So he takes it 33 times a year.
So it's already
I'm a little worried. So to answer though the thing about
Rodon turning around, sorry to interrupt, but that was another thing that happened over the course of those 5 games.
He pitched well a couple games.
Right,
high strikeouts.
Are we now sold that he's going to be that guy?
No. But I am definitely not sold that he's always going to be that guy. But I am of the mindset that he's going to provide value the rest of the year and not implode.
Right.
And it looked as if he was teetering toward
the
plank.
Way. Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? So I would also say this, Sal, about the variables with the whole Verdugo, Torres, DJ, Stanton, Quad, and eventually Dominguez. Like, no, I don't think, and Volpe's second half place, or really 5. Even Wells is 6. And basically everybody put Soto and Judge, which is what's been the story all year, really. I mean, everybody put the 2 studs. I don't think that all of those things will resolve themselves clearly. I think that that's ridiculous. I think that's naive. That's fanboy time. But I do believe that enough of those things will resolve themselves favorably to win them the division.
Okay, and I could totally understand and agree with that. Now, let's just go a little bit deeper. Of those, what do you trust?
I trust Verdugo. I do.
Interesting.
I trust Verdugo. I loved when they got him. You know that. I loved when they got him. I trust him. I don't know if I love him in the leadoff spot, but I do trust him to perform better, you know, more closely to his stats as a pro. I trust Volpe.
He's on my list. There's one more I think that we're going to agree on.
Let me hit Stanton for a second.
Okay.
The thing about Stanton now, I mean, how do you trust his health? He always takes forever to get going. The thing about Stanton the other day, he hit a rocket up the middle and he hit a rocket to right field, which, you know, again, I'm not a hitting coach, but when you're hitting the ball the other way, it's traveling deep, you're seeing it well, and you feel comfortable. So the fact that he stepped into the batter's box after, 6 or 7 weeks of inactivity and did something that he struggles to do, hit the ball up the middle and the other way, so quickly gives me some hope that he's going to actually start hitting some bombs this weekend.
Wells would be a guy that I would trust.
I've never abandoned hope, so I didn't really hit him because I like Austin Wells. You know that.
But
he's good.
Right, but he was a non-factor to start the year, and now his presence. Again, it doesn't mean that he's going to be, you know, Anthony Rizzo in his prime. Yeah, or Posada, right. But he's. I trust him to give quality at-bats and have enough of an impact. Even with Ben Rice down in the order, I trust Ben Rice to be quality. I just can't get behind Glaber. I know this. Glaber is going to cost the Yankees at some point. Whether it's defense in the postseason, clutch spot,
Base running.
Yeah, I've seen too much bad from Glaber Torres. So I think he's a losing player and is going to be a net negative. I still believe, I don't care about the six ribbies, DJ LeMahieu is washed up. So I can't believe in him. I'm not trusting Carlos Rodon at all. I've seen this before. It's why he's maddening. At his peak, he's as dominant a pitcher as there is with his stuff, but it's just not there often enough. So I don't trust either of those three guys at all. I trust Verdugo to a certain extent, but it's been so up and down. I don't love him in the leadoff spot. I like him more as a seven hitter.
I don't disagree with that.
And I think they'll be okay there, which would mean moving Volpe up to the leadoff spot or Jazz.
Yeah, I want to get to that after.
Yeah. And Stanton, I don't trust that he's going to stay healthy, and he's just too inconsistent for my liking. So while I trust him more than the other four that I mentioned, still not at the level that I do of Wells and Volpe. Now, the question would be, is Volpe, Wells, Jazz enough around Soto and Judge, which it very well might be.
And Dominguez.
In the lineup. Well,
eventually.
Well, let's say Stanton doesn't get it done, then Dominguez, or Verdugo doesn't get it done, then Dominguez, sure. So I still think the lineup should be okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about World Series, but should be okay. My biggest question mark with them is going to be in that rotation.
888-808-1019, BT and Sal. Get back to these calls. We have not really done, that's the first time we did Yankees all day, so we'll get those Yankee calls up. The thing, real fast on Torres, right? We had a really long, probably 30 minutes conversation with Cashman the other day. Many of you know that. If you missed it, free Odyssey app, hit rewind, YouTube, WFAN page. It was good. We enjoyed it. The thing that I was most disappointed in from Cashman was his responses about Torres. Made excuses for him.
Right.
He loves being a Yankee. If you love being a Yankee, why don't you run? Like, if you love being here, show us that you love being here. Like, didn't you just pop up here? Like, the criticisms of Gleyber Torres have been going on for years.
Right. And they've bungled Gleyber Torres.
Correct. It's an organizational failure.
Right.
I put that not so much on Cashman with Torres. That's on the manager for allowing him to get away with this nonsense.
Well, Cashman did move him to short.
Well, yeah.
I'm assuming it was an organizational thing that was led by Cashman moving him to short. Like, that to me started the downfall of Gleyber. Maybe not to the highest of levels, but that was the beginning of the bloom coming off the rose with Gleyber, and then he was uncomfortable.
Oh, suck it up. Yeah, he said 5 years to adjust. So I played shortstop for 4 years, whatever.
Right.
Come on.
I thought it was a bad move at the time, but I didn't realize how sensitive Gleyber was and really preferred second. So then that took a little bit away. Not only defensively did it not work, offensively, then they move him back. And he's dropping
pop-ups because he played shortstop, whatever the hell the year was.
I'm just saying that they messed him up. Similar to, I mean, I know it's different, but like the Jabba rules. Like, you screw a guy up sometimes by moving him around and taking him out. Bottom line is Gleyber Torres has never lived up to the hype. And there are many reference points and examples of where it's gone wrong with him. You could reference the Boone stuff, as you were saying.
Yeah, I just
not hold him accountable when he screws up.
Those responses from Cashman were, I get it. He's not going to lambaste him as much as we kind of wished that he did. I guess you have to say that to an extent, but I thought that was weak. That was the one part I did not, well, not the only part, the thing that I most disagreed with. Guarantee that they're terrified if he goes down, we're going to get hammered on the fan, we're going to get crushed in the papers, on the websites, on social media.
Well, that should not even enter their thought process. But if that's the case, it's bad.
But you know it does.
Yeah.
You know it does.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Swung on. There it goes. Deep left, it is high. It is far. It is gone. Number 62 to set the new American League record.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, BT and Sal back on The Fan, 12:46. We'll get back to these Aaron Rodgers calls. Hit a little Mets earlier as well. Let me throw a little something on the table for the Yankees. Actually, I'm going to incorporate both. So I like to do this from time to time. And since neither team played yesterday, let's get to the update as we get back to now as we start to sweat through the rest of the baseball season. Now it's go time, all right? Trade deadline's over. Both teams did what they did. We know where they stand. Here's a little bit more of a deeper analytical dive. So right now the Yankees are projected to win 97.9 games. The Mets are at 86.4. The specific model that I use a lot, I've referenced it before, but you know, I haven't done it in a little bit. The Yankees right now have a 99.9% playoff probability rate. The Mets are at 60.2, and the Yankees have a 76.5 divisional supremacy rate to win the division. And the Mets are obviously low at 2.1. So Yankees about 98 wins. The Mets right around 86. Yankees are almost a lock to make the playoffs. Mets are above 60%, but barely. And then a long shot, you know, and then some to win the division. Yankees right now, the odds on favorite to win the American League East. Does that surprise you that right? And again, it's just one model. But like if I said, hey, Sal, there's a 70. Vegas thinks there's a 77% chance the Yankees win the East, not Baltimore. Would you take that or not?
I think it should be actually higher. They're tied right now. Yeah, they're tied right now.
Yeah.
I mean, anything could happen. It's the rest of the way.
Well, then why not make it 50-50? Because anything could happen. I agree with you.
Yeah, but it just feels like the Yankees, because of who they are always going to have the advantage in that regard. I guess that's a fair number then when you put it that way.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they were down for a while. I mean, I don't even know if the division means that much anymore. I wanted to ask Cashman that, obviously, but we ran out of time the other day. I was going to ask him, had it on my list, if he values winning the division or prefers one or the other. Some people don't like the layoff that happens after you win the division. Anyway, yeah, that's fair. 70's fair.
I'm getting greedy now. All right. Listen, I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't know what was going to happen when the Yankees just, and hopefully that's the absolute bottom out. They were dead, dormant, light. They looked awful. They have regenerated a lot because of Jazz Chisholm and obviously Judge's the man, whatever. They've got a lot of games they're supposed to win now. So you look at this, Toronto, who's missing players and not even that good. There's a 9-game homestand in the Bronx. 3 with Toronto, 3 with the Angels, and then 3 with the Rangers. I want 7-2. Like, the Yankees got to bag 7 wins here. I mean, let me take that back. They don't have to. But to me, if they are going to win the division, you go 7-2 against these teams. Like, you're supposed to win a lot of these games.
Why just 7-2?
Well, I mean, I want to be realistic. It's baseball. I'm not saying they can't go 8-1.
Oh, well, I mean, they've won 5 in a row.
Yeah.
Against better teams.
True. That's true.
The way that they're playing. Now, I do think that they're going to come back down to earth a little bit. Like, if you actually look at the way that they won some of these games, they very easily could have lost, and you could argue should have lost Saturday night. The Grisham ball should have been caught by a competent outfielder. I know the dude could hit, Tyler O'Neill. If I were in left field, I would have made that play. I could confidently say that. May not be able to hit one over the monster. I would have made that play in left field. Like, it's a fly ball. You got to catch it. Anyway, it drops in.
Well, they even got lucky with the ball that banged off the first base bag that went to Torres. What's his name? Made a great play in center field, Grisham, in the extra innings.
And by the way, like, I'm not trying to take away their win. They earned the win. They got it. And it wasn't like they haven't had bad luck over the course of the last 7 weeks. So you take the wins when you can get them. I'm just saying it was close to losing that game. Also in Philadelphia, they were fortunate to be able to come away with at least one of those wins. They probably would have won that series anyway, but I'm not sold that all is right, all is fixed with the Yankees just yet. I understand the potential. I need to see a little bit more after what I saw for 7 consecutive weeks than just to all of a sudden feel like the switch has been flipped and everything's back on. Yankees going to the World Series off of five games, two of which they were very fortunate to win.
And by the way, I agree. I'm not saying that I think they're going 7-2, although I think they could. I'm saying they need to.
Yeah.
Like,
let's start to turn the corner now. This should be where the worst is behind us,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have to go out there and dominate every game, but play like a good team the majority of the time. I mean, that's what
it's just a lot of bad baseball to ignore, to your point. I mean, they played so bad for so long to just sit here and say, well, it was just a little aberration. I mean, an aberration's a bad week. An anomaly's a bad, hey, drop 6 out of 7 here,
right.
and let's get back on the horse. They were the White Sox for a month and a half.
Okay, and then when I ask you, what was the biggest reason you think for the 5-game turnaround?
Chisholm.
Well, but A, Jazz wasn't even here for the first couple of those games.
Yeah, he got to the Fenway, on Sunday.
B, he's not going to be able to be Babe Ruth the rest of the way.
For sure.
So that type of impact, now he may be better than what he was in Miami. Sure, maybe there's the Yankee pump up where he feels happy to be in New York in a pennant race and put on the pinstripes, and maybe he plays well for an extended stretch or the rest of the way, but it's not going to be to that level where he's homering 4 times in 4 games.
No, there's no way. No, so he's not that kind of hitter.
Yeah, so that's one that's going to level out at some point.
Mm-hmm. What if DJ just started getting going? I'm not saying put money on that, but he started striking a little bit. What if he starts going up?
Well, that to me has been the biggest thing. Not DJ specifically, but Verdugo, Wells, Torres,
mm-hmm.
making teams putting teams in a difficult spot, forcing them to pitch to Aaron Judge, or at least making things more difficult to be able to pitch around Aaron Judge. Are those guys, are you fully now, and not you in general, but just are we all fully now believing that Verdugo's going to be the leadoff guy, Volpe's figured it out now finally, and he'll be consistent, Torres is going to be fine, LeMahieu's turned the corner, Giancarlo's going to have his presence. Are we sold that what we've seen in these last 5 games is going to continue the rest of the way? I'm not. And we haven't even gotten to the starting pitching yet.
Well, and Cole's going on Sunday.
Yeah,
you could probably say that's the biggest game of the Yankee season so far.
For him, 1,000%, and for them, because they need him to at least give 6 innings.
Yeah, now
he's got to go out there and just be healthy.
Yeah, and there's not even a guarantee that he absolutely pitches. Like, they believe he's going to pitch. When you scratch with general soreness, that's very nebulous. Like, okay, is it the shoulders? Is it the elbow? Is it the leg?
He said the elbow. He's just fatigued.
I know, but
that's not normal.
Let's
say he started the season. Like, would he be shut down in his 8th start because of body fatigue?
Well, he never has thus far in his career. He's a horse. He takes it 33 times a year.
So it's already
I'm a little worried. So to answer though the thing about
Rodon turning around, sorry to interrupt, but that was another thing that happened over the course of those 5 games.
He pitched well a couple games.
Right,
high strikeouts.
Are we now sold that he's going to be that guy?
No. But I am, definitely not sold that he's always going to be that guy, but I am of the mindset that he's going to provide value the rest of the year and not implode.
Right.
And it looked as if he was teetering toward
they were going the plank. Way. Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? So I would also say this, Sal, about the variables with the whole Verdugo, Torres, DJ, Stanton, Quad, and eventually Dominguez. Like, no, I don't think, and Volpe's second half plays, or really 5. Even Wells at 6. And basically everybody but Soto and Judge, which is what's been the story all year,
bingo.
Really. I mean, everybody put the 2 studs. I don't think that all of those things will resolve themselves. Clearly, I think that that's ridiculous. I think that's naive. That's fanboy time. But I do believe that enough of those things will resolve themselves favorably to win them the division.
Okay, and I could totally understand and agree with that. Now, let's just go a little bit deeper. Of those, what do you trust?
I trust Verdugo. I do.
Interesting.
I trust Verdugo. I loved when they got him. I trust him. I don't know if I love him in the leadoff spot, but I do trust him to perform better, more closely to his stats as a pro. I trust Volpe.
He's on my list. There's one more I think we're going to agree on.
Let me hit Stanton for a second.
Okay.
The thing about Stanton now, I mean, how do you trust his health? He always takes forever to get going. The thing about Stanton the other day, he had a rocket up the middle. And he hit a rocket to right field, which, again, I'm not a hitting coach, but when you're hitting the ball the other way, it's traveling deep, you're seeing it well, and you feel comfortable. So the fact that he stepped into the batter's box after, 6 or 7 weeks of inactivity and did something that he struggles to do, hit the ball out the middle and the other way, so quickly gives me some hope that he's going to actually start hitting some bombs this weekend.
Wells would be a guy that I would trust.
I've never abandoned hope, so no, I didn't really hit him because I like Austin Wells. You know that.
But
he's good.
Right, but he was a non-factor to start the year, and now his presence. Again, it doesn't mean that he's going to be, you know, Anthony Rizzo in his prime. Yeah, or Posada, right. But he's, I trust him to give quality at-bats and have enough of an impact. Even with Ben Rice at the bottom of the order, I trust Ben Rice to be quality. I just can't get behind Glaber. I don't guess this. I know this. Glaber is going to cost the Yankees at some point. Whether it's defense in the postseason, clutch spot,
Base running.
Yeah, I've seen too much bad from Gleyber Torres. So I think he's a losing player and is going to be a net negative. I still believe, I don't care about the six ribbies, DJ LeMahieu is washed up. So I can't believe in him. I'm not trusting Carlos Rodon at all. I've seen this before. It's why he's maddening. At his peak, he's as dominant a pitcher as there is with his stuff, but it's just not there often enough. So I don't trust either of those three guys at all. I trust Verdugo to a certain extent, but it's been so up and down. I don't love him in the leadoff spot. I like him more as a seven hitter.
I don't disagree with that.
And I think they'll be okay there, which would mean moving Volpe up to the leadoff spot or Jazz.
Yeah, I want to get to that after.
Yeah. And Stanton, I don't trust that he's going to stay healthy, and he's just too inconsistent for my liking. So while I trust him more than the other four that I mentioned, still not at the level that I do of Wells and Volpe. Now, the question would be, is Volpe, Wells, Jazz enough around Soto and Judge, which it very well might be.
And Dominguez.
In the lineup. Well,
eventually.
Well, let's say Stanton doesn't get it done, then Dominguez, or Verdugo doesn't get it done, then Dominguez, sure. So I still think the lineup should be okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about World Series, but should be okay. My biggest question mark with them is going to be in that rotation.
888-808-1019, BT and Sal. We'll get back to these calls. We have not really done, that's the first time we did Yankees all day, so we'll get those Yankee calls up. The thing, real fast on Torres, right? We had a really long, probably 30 minutes conversation with Cashman the other day. Many of you know that. If you missed it, free Odyssey app, Hit Rewind, YouTube, WFAN page. It was good. We enjoyed it. The thing that I was most disappointed in from Cashman was his responses about Torres. Made excuses for him.
Right.
He loves being a Yankee. If you love being a Yankee, why don't you run? Like, if you love being here, show us that you love being here. Like, didn't you just pop up here? Like, the criticisms of Gleyber Torres have been going on for years.
Right. And they've bungled Gleyber Torres.
Correct. It's an organizational failure.
Right.
I put that not so much on Cashman with Torres. That's on the manager for allowing him to get away with this nonsense.
Well, Cashman did move him to short.
Well, yeah.
I'm assuming it was an organizational thing that was led by Cashman moving him to short. Like, that to me started the downfall of Gleyber. Maybe not to the highest of levels, but that was the beginning of the bloom coming off the rose with Gleyber, and then he was uncomfortable.
Oh, suck it up. Yeah, he said 5 years to adjust. I played shortstop for 4 years, whatever.
Right.
Come on.
I thought it was a bad move at the time, but I didn't realize how sensitive Gleyber was and really preferred second. So then that took a little bit away. Not only defensively did it not work, offensively, then they move him back, and he's dropping
pop-ups because he played shortstop, whatever the hell the year was.
I'm just saying that they messed him up. Similar to, I mean, I know it's different, but like the Jabba rules, like you screw a guy up sometimes by moving him around and taking him out. Bottom line is Gleyber Torres has never lived up to the hype. And there are many reference points and examples of where it's gone wrong with him. You could reference the Boone stuff, as you were saying.
Yeah, I just
not hold him accountable when he screws up.
That those responses from Cashman were, I get it. He's not going to lambaste him as much as we kind of wish that he did. I guess you have to say that to an extent, but I thought that was weak. That was the one part I did not. Well, not the only part. The thing that I most disagreed with.